Word of mouth.
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 Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. You heard the saying, if it bleeds, it leads. Well, that's kind of the point for a new collection of short stories called Murder, Inc., and that's I-N-K, 13 Tales of New England Newsroom Crime. Dan Chesney is an author, a seasoned journalist, and associate publisher of The Hippo. He's also editor of Murder, Inc., and Dan, great to finally have you on the program.
Oh, thanks for being here.
Oreste Darkonti is former publisher of The Sun Chronicle from Attleboro, Massachusetts, and a writer of pulp fiction. His story, One Way, Dead End, is just one of the tales in Murder, Inc. Oreste, I am told we can call you Rusty.
That is good.
Dan, this is a collection of pulpy stories
Yes.
about murders and deadlines and mean editors. And at the heart of these stories is the idea that the reporter is kind of obsessive, maybe a little unbalanced. Is that an observation from your long career in journalism?
More than a little unbalanced, yes. The whole idea behind this particular collection was that the line between the reporter and the detective is very, very thin. And the obsession of the hard-boiled detective is very similar to the obsession of the hard-boiled reporter. And sometimes you go over that line, and when you do go over that line, bad things tend to happen.
Yeah, but it must be really fun for reporters who have to, you know, meet deadlines, all about accuracy, fact-checking, to let their freak flag run free.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Doing fiction.
We knew right from the very beginning that we were that this collection was going to see the demise of several publishers, and we weren't disappointed.
Well, Oreste, your story has booze, murder, a heavy drinking protagonist, a dark sense of humor, smart and sexy dame, so sounds like a detective story to me.
Right. Sounds like my life, yeah.
Oh, really? Do you call everyone dames and skirts?
Not usually.
Well, I'd love to have you read a bit from your story to get a sense of the writing style.
Okay.
So you can set up the scene for us. This is at the Chuck, which the locals call the Upchuck.
Yes, yes. It's a sleazy bar. I should preface it by saying when I first started deciding I was going to write a novel of pulp fiction, I had no idea how to do it or where to start, but I knew it would begin in a sleazy bar that I had in mind. And so I did that and wrote on from then, had no idea where it was going, and ended up with three murders and an attempted murder near the end. So I'll just paint a little picture of this bar. Miller, who's the editor, he waved to Missy the barmaid, a jaded loser with tattoo teardrops on her cheek. She opened the Bud Light on the side of the cooler and put it in front of Miller. Nobody used a glass at the Chuck. Getting a clean one was like winning megabucks. I liked the Chuck because there was no jukebox and nobody talked. Everyone just sat there staring into their brown bottles or at the dark TV in the corner that had never worked, watching in their minds old black and white movies about the way they were. Oh, and I lived upstairs. I always said I ended up in the boroughs because I took a wrong turn off Interstate 95. After my marriage went sour, I just needed some space. That space being a desk at the Burroughs Beacon and a reserved stool at the Chuck.
Terrific. Can you walk us through some of that language, that kind of hard-boiled detective language?
Well, I don't know. I guess it comes natural. I've been in the newspaper business probably about 40 years, so I've done just about everything, and did a lot of creative writing, feature stories, and stuff like that. I think you get used to that. Most of the outside creative writing I did prior to this was poetry, actually, and then I thought I'd take a hand at this, you know. And as I said, it. I was working on a novel. I was up to like 23,000 words when I found out about this anthology. And so I had to cut it down to 8,000. And of course, I'm an editor. I know how to do that, you know. And I boiled it down. It's probably a better story now. But it was three times as long.
Well, there's a funny part of your story where the main character, Randy, he has to do a little social media for a story that he's working on. I mean, otherwise, you could be in 1956 or something like that. Do you find that that digital reality of today's reporter clashes with this smoky, noirish aesthetic?
Well, a little bit, but I think it's just part of the job now. It's pretty normal.
I was going to say, we have a story in here from Mark Arsenal. I believe it's from Mark Arsenal, where the the main three characters are just recently fired from a newspaper that's downsizing. That's a theme, by the way, in the collection as well.
Hmm.
Yeah. And they sit around at a bar, and they're looking for dirt on their on this publisher who just fired them all. And what do? They all whip out their iPads and their cell phones to try to access the internet to get some information. So we're covering both sides of the digital age, I think. Although there is a story in here where we fight Nazis as well.
I did notice that. But it seems like there's a little bit of wistfulness of the good old days of, you know, gumshoe newspaper reporting. Did that become a recurring thing?
Yeah, I can't speak for Rusty. I can speak for myself. One of the challenges for me in getting all these stories and going through them and editing and then picking them out for the collection was that I felt a little wistfulness. You know, I'm not a reporter anymore. I was for 20 years. And it's a difficult, obsessive, takes all of your time, the money stinks kind of job. But man, it can be fun sometimes.
Oh, hey, I agree 100%. reporting is the best job. I'd like to go back to reporting now. Even though I've been a publisher, I would love to be a reporter.
I'm talking about Murder, Inc. That's a collection of short stories that kind of take the style of noir pulp fiction and place it squarely in the newsrooms of New England. Stories of murders and bad editors and tough deadlines. And joining me is the editor, Dan Chesney, seasoned journalist in his own right, and Rusty Darconti. He's former publisher of the Sun Chronicle and one of the contributors to the collection. Well, both of you have done the newspaper gig, but done other types of writing as well. So how did newsrooms prepare you for writing for a wider audience, Dan?
I think newsrooms prepared me for all types of writing, streamlining, editing, making sure every word count, the inverted pyramid, the whole 10 yards for me, especially as in editing. You know, the irony, of course, of editing a collection of newsroom from reporters in New England, most of whom I knew, a lot of whom I'm friends with, was that I had to be a good editor. I had to use my newsroom skills in order to edit the stories and make sure that, you know, I still remained friends with them.
So. You just hit on something, the camaraderie,
yeah.
The sort of camaraderie of the journalists.
Oh, yeah.
How does that play?
Yeah, I imagine it's probably the same with cops and with firemen and with detectives and that whole, you know, after a tough day, you get together at the end of the day. And there's a lot of that fictionalized in the story. At the end of the day, you get together and you just blow off steam. In Rusty's case, it's, you know, his character is blowing off steam in a bar. But there's a lot of bars in this book. So, I think, you know, in order, you get around and you kibitz and you complain about your editors, you complain about your publishers. I think when you're in an industry where you have to work that hard, oftentimes for that little payback, at the end of the day, you just want to get together and kind of release.
So that hard drinking model we have of the reporter on deadline with the scotch in the lower third drawer, true?
Well, I have to say that at one time it was not that uncommon to find a bottle of whiskey in a drawer, but not anymore. You never see that anymore today.
They're not smoking in newsrooms either.
No, they're not doing that either.
I think they get together at the Starbucks now.
Yeah.
So are we going to assume that there's a lot more accuracy in sourcing in all of these hard-boiled Murder, Inc. stories?
I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of these stories come in part from real experiences, yes.
Plaid Swede, which is the publisher of other short story collections along with Murder, Inc. Previously, all the other books are about New Hampshire. There's Live Free or Undead, a book of horror stories, Love Free or Die, Granite State romance stories. So, Dan, what's behind this choice to broaden the scope with Murder, Inc. and include stories from all over the region?
Yeah, well, George Gears himself, and in fact, was George your boss at one point? Or were
no,
you
he
his
wasn't.
Boss?
No, but I'm a good friend of George.
Is that the publisher?
Yeah, that's the publisher. George actually knew... There's a lot of stories in here where editors and publishers with the name George meet their untimely ends, and that's not a surprise either, because George is well known around New England media, around the New England newsroom. So when him and I sat down to plot this out, originally we wanted to keep it with the New Hampshire theme, but the more we talked about it, and the more we looked at his and my experiences in New England, the more we thought that we could actually reach out and make this more of a regional book. There's so many reporters and editors and former publishers out there who have these great stories. So why not make it a big deal? Plus, we had the opportunity to release the book at the newspaper convention down in Boston, which is where we had our big release party, and which is where the release party for Volume 2 will be next year as well. So we wanted to jump at that chance.
So George, as often as he's been bumped off, he's going to publish another collection for you.
He's going to continue to be bumped off some more, yes.
Oreste, do you think there's something about New England that lends itself to these kind of pulpy stories? I don't know, the character, the places, the taciturn nature, what?
Certainly New England has a lot of character, and you see that, you know, especially down by me in Attleboro, Mass. You know, the we got Lovecraft right over the border there. You know, you can see his grave. You can retrace his steps. In fact, they just had a Lovecraft walking tour. There's a lot of seamy places, a lot of old factory towns that have a lot of character and have a lot of characters in them.
What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, plus we're all right on top of each other, right? You know, I spent a lot of time in the Midwest, and there's space in between towns. But here you leave one mill town and you enter another. So we all know each other, you know, and especially the newspaper biz. Everybody knows everybody in the newspaper biz. The space between Boston and Manchester is 45 minutes. That's, you know, a quarter of the way across Chicago, right? So New England has a unique place in sort of pulp literature and genre fiction. And a lot of the guys like Damian Runyon and Dashiell Hammett spent time in Boston. I think it's pretty clear and pretty obvious why a series of short stories about murderous newspaper rooms would be birthed in New England.
Oreste D'Arcante, former publisher of the Sun Chronicle in Attleboro, Mass., and a contributor to Murder, Inc., thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Virginia.
And Dan Chesney, he's associate publisher of The Hippo, editor of Murder, Inc., 13 Tales of New England Newsroom Crime. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for having us.
Dan Oreste and five of their other contributing writers from the collection are going to be reading at Gibson's Bookstore in Concord this Saturday. That's March 26th at 4 o'clock. They'll be up in North Conway at the Book Warehouse on April 22nd. You can find details at wordofmouthradio.org.